Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I'm going to read this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 15, Texts 32 and 33. And the title of the chapter is Description of the Kingdom of God. That's a nice chapter. And the scene, the speakers of these verses are the four Kumaras. The scene is they've come like little children will sometimes do, just wandering here and there with no apparent purpose other than just they want to go here, they want to go there. In other words, their form is like Radharani there, little boys. Brahman realized, a little difference between Radharani and the four Kumaras, completely detached from anything material, neutral towards anything, and just by curiosity, wanting to go here, wanting to go there. And at the seventh gate of Vaikuntha, where they just happened to be visiting, the gatekeepers, Jayan Vijay, stopped them, barred them from entering. And Prabhupada describes like little children that are wandering here and there. If they're checked, they become angry. So the Kumaras are disturbed. Why are you stopping us? And now they're giving their reasons why they're disturbed. The person speaking, it's Maitreya narrating this, to Vidura. So that's how it starts. Munaya Uchuhu. The sages said, this is the four Kumaras said, but Maitreya's narrating. Who are these two persons who have developed such a discordant mentality? Even though they are posted in the service of the Lord in the highest position and are expected to have developed the same qualities as the Lord. How are these two personalities living in Vaikuntha? Where is the possibility of an enemy's coming into the kingdom of God? The Supreme Personality of Godhead has no enemy. Who could be envious of Him? Probably these two persons are imposters. Therefore, they suspect others to be like themselves. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The difference between the inhabitants of a Vaikuntha planet and those of a material planet is that in Vaikuntha all the residents engage in the service of the Lord Himself and are equipped with all His good qualities. It has been analyzed by great personalities that when a conditioned soul is liberated and becomes a devotee, about 79% of all the good qualities of the Lord develop in His person. Therefore, in the Vaikuntha world, there is no question of enmity between the Lord and the residents. Here, in this material world, the citizens may be inimical to the chief executives or heads of state, but in Vaikuntha, there is no such mentality. One is not allowed to enter Vaikuntha unless he has completely developed the good qualities. The basic principle of goodness is to accept subordination to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The sages, therefore, were surprised to see that the two doormen who checked them from entering the palace were not exactly like the residents of Aequintaloca. It may be said that a doorman's duty is to determine who should be allowed to enter the palace and who should not. But that is not relevant in the matter because no one is allowed to enter the Vaikuntha planets unless he has developed 100% his mentality of devotional service to the Supreme Lord. No enemy of the Lord can enter Vaikuntha. The Kumaras concluded that the only reason for the doormen's checking them was that the doormen themselves were imposters. So look at this. Even in Vaikuntha, they've got conflicts. There are statements made on both sides of this issue. Were the Kumaras right? Were the Kumaras wrong? And when you have some situation like that, don't take sides. There's a transcendent, when it comes to the Kumaras, there's a transcendental, not obvious transcendental reason behind something that's puzzling, enigmatic, like this. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur discloses what that mystery was. And the mystery has to do with the Lord's being expert. The quality of expert is by doing one thing, multiple things are accomplished. And it's not like multi-processing when you're chanting japa, that you're planning your life and you're solving problems and on the internet, and not that kind of multi-processing thing, but one thing, many things are accomplished. One thing. So it looks like if you only see one part of the puzzle, the enigmatic picture, it's confusing. But look behind and behind and behind, and there's the Supreme Lord. And he's reciprocating with different devotees. The unpacking of the puzzle, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, simultaneously, the personality of Godhead, Lord Narayana, was satisfying the Kumaras, he was satisfying Jayan Vijay, and he was satisfying the Goddess of Fortune. Each of them having a different aspiration in service to the Lord, and those aspirations seemingly being in conflict with the interest of the Lord, but in Vaikuntha that can't be. So the Lord resolved. Here's the situation, as he describes. Jai and Vijay weren't only posted at the seventh gate of Vaikuntha. Sometimes they were personally assisting Lord Narayan and being doorkeepers directly in his palace, not just at the gate of the palace. So one time, Narayan asked Jayan Vijay, please guard the door, I'm going to rest. The Lord doesn't rest. Note that just a pastime. I'm going to rest, so don't let anybody in. So, yes sir, we don't let anybody in. And after some time, the Goddess of Fortune, Lakshmi, came to the door of Lord Narayan, and they didn't let her in. Narayan said, don't let anyone in, he's resting. Lakshmi didn't say anything, but she felt something, like, these persons, I'm the Goddess of Fortune, I'm the eternal consort of Narayan, why is he not letting me in? But she didn't say anything. You know, one of those kind of things. So Lord Narayan awoke, Lakshmi was entered into the place where Narayan was. And she spoke her heart to Lord Narayan, indicating these two doorkeepers, they should be punished because they wouldn't allow me in. And Lord Narayan didn't say, yes, I'll punish them. And he didn't say, no, I won't punish them. One of those. But he registered that Lakshmi wanted to see them in that situation. Some correcting, because they're in Vaikuntha and they should be able to discriminate who should enter, who shouldn't enter. Meanwhile, of course, these are events not in time, they're eternal, because that's the nature of Vaikuntha. There's time is conspicuous by its absence, but we say, for conventional purposes, meanwhile, Jai and Vijay were considering their beloved Lord. He has many features to his personality, his nature, and one of them is he likes chivalry. He likes some combat. But who is qualified to give him combat? If he so desires, we can do that service. If he so desires, we can take the position of one who is in opposition to him. So they had that desire. And then here come the four Kumaras, and they want to enter into Vaikuntha. Again, like little children, just become curious. It hasn't happened yet. It is going to happen in some coming verses where at the gates, as Narayan comes to knowing the scene that has happened, the aroma, the air carrying the fragrance of the sandalwood paste and the tulsi buds, manjaris, from the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, carried by the air of Vaikuntha entering the nostrils of the Kumaras, they become transformed instantly just by, you ever smell a flower that's been offered to the deity and you feel a transformation like the Kumaras? So they're very qualified. The potency is there nonetheless, but they're very, very qualified. So there's this language before that happens where they wanted to see the Lord, and they're speaking here where they have some idea of the Lord and the nature of the place of Vaikuntha. So they're not just like little children that don't know where they're going. They're just, so that their position is also a little special, little difficult to understand. Were they simply Brahman realized? Did they have some attraction for the Lord? A little, not so completely 100% black and white clear. They wanted, very clear, they wanted to go see the Lord. And though, so that's devotional. So in any case, the personality of Godhead holds as very dear those who are Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. It's his heart. It's what he feels. And so when they were checked from entering Vaikuntha and they're feeling these feelings that they're feeling, why are we being checked? Narayana wanted to give support to the Brahmana, the Brahmanas, the four Kumaras. So the whole thing is orchestrated by the Lord's internal potency. That's the deeper part of this mystery. So they were checked. And at once, we'll hear the coming verses, Lord Narayana, immediately, because he's omniscient, of course he orchestrated the whole thing anyway, he immediately came to that seventh gate. And he came so swiftly, he didn't even come with Garuda. He didn't even come with his slippers, he came barefoot, and just zoom, zoom, just came right to the gate. And in coming verses, he accepted completely the rightful action of the Kumaras, supported them, honored them. He accepted full responsibility for what the giant Vijay had done. I am to blame. I should be admonished by you. So I fully accept the conclusion that you've reached. So he gave support to the Brahmanas. He gave the opportunity for giant Vijay to be in this combat position with the personality of Godhead. And he fulfilled the desire of the goddess of fortune to correct giant Vijay for their improper action in her estimation, not allowing her to enter into the resting chamber of Lord Narayan. Very mysterious. So then there's little pieces of that whole wonderful enactment. And here's one of the pieces. The Kumaras, who are, they're Shaktivesh avatars. They're bearers of the Lord's knowledge potency, Gyan Shakti. So they're not just smart. They're fully empowered by the Lord's knowledge potency. And they're describing, for our benefit, or from our perspective, they're describing the difference between Vaikuntha and Kuntha. This is the realm of anxiety, and the spiritual world is the realm of no anxiety. And there's no anxiety, although there's diversity or plurality, there's individuality to the maximum, but there's no disharmony. Whatever is the will of the Supreme Lord Narayana is the will of other living entities. Even like this little example I just gave, the will of Lakshmi, the will of the Kumaras, the will of Giant Vijay, there's diversity, but there's no disharmony because everything is centered on the will of the personality of Godhead. That's Vaikuntha. So their analysis is, entering into Vaikuntha, how can there be anyone who has enmity towards the personality of Godhead? The answer is, no one can have enmity towards the personality of Godhead, at least in Vaikuntha. And these are residents of Vaikuntha, so how are they seeing enmity towards the personality of Godhead in Vaikuntha? It's not possible. And therefore, they must be pretenders. Now, a little going over here for just a moment, in Sri Brahma Samhita, which is a very lofty literature, although it's like in a skinny book form, in the early verses, in text 5, it describes the Trishulas, the tridents, that are in 10 directions. So the 8 plus up and down makes 10. And they're protectors, Dikpals. They protect the Dham. So unqualified people can't enter. So the Kumaras are saying, you know, why do you have why do you have protectors, Jain Vijay, keeping unqualified people from entering? But there are. They're protectors to keep unqualified people from entering. So they're well educated, they're uniquely empowered, but there are protectors of the Dham. And Jain Vijay were posted there for that purpose. And their consideration was, unless one as Prabhupada is writing here, unless one has 100% purity in devotional service, 100% purity in devotional service, you can't enter the spiritual world. So, practical application, my dear devotees, get it together. 100%. I shared this yesterday. One time Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was giving a lecture and said the same thing. In order to become to enter into the spiritual world, to go back to Godhead, you must become 100% pure, no material contamination. And he saw how dejected the audience became, and he recognized that and said, well, at least 80%, but still, 80%. Then he stood up and said, at least 75%, tossed his chadar over his shoulder and walked out of the assembly. Prabhupada said, I'm so many percent, I forget what the percent, more lenient than my Guru Maharaj. 100%. And here it is, 100%. 80%, 75%. That 75% Prabhupada gave once in terms of the nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtuki. In the nishta stage, it's a stage where prayeshu almost to nil, prayeshu, and then Prabhupada said almost to nil means say 75% gone. That is to say, so here's 25%, here's 75%. Bhakti is so strong that the influence of this 25%, it just gets overwhelmed with bhakti. Bhakti is so strong that the 25 or whatever almost gone part, but something's still there. It's overwhelmed by the strength of devotion to the personality of Godhead. And then that equals the stage of steadiness. And before that, there's unsteadiness. We all know what unsteadiness is, because that's the position that we're in. Sometimes not. Sometimes not. Stronger, weaker. Sometimes not. The progression of bhakti is to come to where it's always steady. Steady in that particular stage is where even there's some residual something, but the residual something doesn't prevail. Bhakti prevails always. That's steady. So we should try to become steady. And continue to become more than steady, become completely pure. Even according to Brihad Bhagavatamrita, even beyond Shuddha is the stage of love that Lord Chaitanya wished to give, the stage of very confidential love in Vrindavan, loving Krishna beyond just being pure, whether you're squeaky clean and there's nothing residual left. Spontaneous, transcendental love of Krishna and intimacy of love and the sweetness of the mood of Vrindavan. What a gift. And we're way down here with the struggling with our mind and senses and our abhadras or anarthas, our impurities. But that's okay. We stay with the process and gradually anartha nirvritti will bring us to the nishtha stage. So, back to the Kumaras, they're saying, who are these people? Don't they know? They should know. They're the most highly posted position representing the Supreme Lord, and they don't have the qualification to see who should enter, who should not enter. I think they're imposters. We think they're imposters. Must be. Otherwise, how can they be here? And the same theme continues. Text 33. The Kumaras say, in the Vaikuntha world, there is complete harmony between the residents and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just as there is complete harmony within space between the big and the small skies. What does that mean? It's in the purport. Why then is there a seed of fear in this field of harmony? These two persons are dressed like inhabitants of Vaikuntha, but wherefrom can their disharmony come into existence? They don't belong here. They're the disharmonious ones. They should leave this place. They're unfit to be here. They're saying we're unfit to be here. They're unfit to be here. One of those kind of things. It's a long purport, and just I'll summarize quickly the first paragraph. Prabhupada speaks in the first paragraph about criminal department and civil department in this world. And the criminal department is a small part. The civil department is a big part. So like, you know, civil rights and then crime. The different types of law, different types of law enforcement, different types of penalties for breaking the law. And the criminal department is more severe, and that's smaller. So he's using that as a springboard into the small sky, the big sky. In the spiritual world, there's also these divisions. How does he say? All living entities who are residents in the material universes are considered to be more or less criminals because they do not wish to abide by the order of the Lord. Or they are against the harmonious activities of God's will. The principle of creation is that the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, is by nature joyful, and he becomes many in order to enhance his transcendental joy. The living entities, like ourselves, being part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, are meant to satisfy the senses of the Lord. Thus, whenever there is a discrepancy in that harmony, immediately, the living entity is entrapped by Maya or illusion. That's this place, the kingdom of Maya. So this is the criminal department, and then there's the civil department, like the immediate ones. So he'll go into it, the small sky, big sky, and how impersonalists interpret this verse. But we'll get there. Next paragraph. The external energy of the Lord is called the material world, and the kingdom of the internal energy of the Lord is called Vaikuntha, or the kingdom of God. In the Vaikuntha world, there is no disharmony between the Lord and the residents. Therefore, God's creation in the Vaikuntha world is perfect. There is no cause of fear. There's that little popular slogan, no fear. And we can say, you know, rubbish, or that's a bluff. Macho, no fear. No fear. That's, you know, fool. Pretender. Imposter. But in the spiritual world, there's no fear. Why? There's no enmity. Why? Because the will of the Supreme Lord is completely, although there's diversity, is completely that which rules the hearts of the residents of Vaikuntha. So while there's diversity, there's no enmity, and so there's no fear. The entire kingdom of God is such a completely harmonious unit, there's no possibility of enmity. And he gives the example of bodily parts. There's the stomach, there's the legs, there's the intestines. And so there's parts, and but the parts aren't at odds with each other, they're part of the whole. So there's not a conflict between the intestines and the stomach, or one part of the body and another part of the body. So while there's diversity, there's no conflict. Then he goes into the Mayavadi philosophers. So get ready for the club, letting him have it. The Mayavad philosophers, the impersonalists, interpret this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam to mean that the small sky and the big sky are one, but this idea cannot stand. The example of the big sky and the small skies is also applicable within a person's body. The big sky is the body itself, and the intestines and the other parts of the body occupy the small sky. Each and every part of the body has individuality, even though occupying a small part of the total body. Similarly, the whole creation is the body of the Supreme Lord, and we created beings, or anything that is created, are but a small part of that body. So we all know, when Prabhupada says like that, what comes next. The part is meant to serve the whole. And when the part is serving the whole, that's its healthy condition. When the part rebelliously chooses to not serve the whole, that's the diseased condition, the unhealthy condition. That's the Maya condition. So in Vaikuntha, there's no Maya. There's no disharmony. While there's diversity, full individuality, there's no disharmony. So there's no fear. So why are these gatekeepers keeping us out? They're unqualified. The oneness of the whole and the part is in their quality. So qualitative oneness, quantitative difference, the small and the big. But there is distinction. There's oneness, and there's distinction at the same time. That's Lord Chaitanya's, obviously, Lord Chaitanya's Achincha Veda Veda Tattva philosophy. In this little appreciation of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in reading about his life, there was one scholar, a prominent, famous scholar, contemporary of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he had written a fiction book about Krishna. You know, something like somebody might do today, make an animated video story about Krishna, but just like fiction. Krishna did this, Krishna did that, kind of thing. And he, because he was a scholar, he respected the scholarship of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He wanted to show the book to Bhaktivinoda Thakur before it was published. So in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's biography, it describes he spent 4 days, day and night, without sleeping, without eating, without drinking water, dealing with this man to help him understand, you can't write a fiction book about Krishna. And the man accepted. He respected Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He heard what he said. He rewrote the book. And then he had it published. Later, that same person, in appreciation of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, described that whenever he was in his association, sometimes it was not just the two of them, it were other persons, and invariably, he wrote, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur would begin very quickly speaking Achintya Beta Beta Tattva. You know, this is like, come on in, let's sit down and have some tea, and let me tell you about Achintya Beta Beta Tattva. You know, that was his social interaction. Because he was who he was. He didn't drink tea either, so. But just, you know, social, conventional, you know, parlor discussion. You know, the niceties and politenesses and those exchanges. But very quickly the discussion went to what would help the person who he was interacting with. Of course, he knew how to do, and we don't always know how to do, but very comfortably, he would bring them to at least knowledge, at least having the opportunity of proper discrimination between reality and illusion, between Maya and Vaikuntha here. That's what's the topic here. Last paragraph. Harmony or disharmony is realized because of the law and order of a particular place. It starts on the worldly level. China. I mean, I visit China, and they have a certain set of phrases they say over and over again. Here's one of them. China is a government of law. That's one of them. Like, you'll hear it thousands and thousands and thousands of times. Like, you know, the iron fist. China is a government of... They don't say democracy, communism, monarchy. China is a government of law. And then there's another one. And I had a government officer recite these to me. So, like, in China, there are five recognized religions. And somebody that, like, works at the UN said they heard someone from China saying the same thing. It's like the doctrine that everyone's supposed to say, and they just say it over and over again. In China, there are five recognized religions, and then they recite them. And then the next one is, the religion that you're part of is not one of those five. So, you know, do the math. Where does that leave you? You know, China is a government of law. You're outside the law. So, you know, that's how they make harmony. China is a government of law. But, you know, there may be other types of government of democracy, or governments of, you know, different types of governments. Government of communism. So, where there's law, and there's law abiding, then there's harmony. That's the idea. The next sentence. Religion is the law and order of the Supreme Lord. Okay, so it's a dictionary definition, and you can find it in the dictionary. Religion is laws given by God, and a religious person is one who follows the laws given by God. I was in Tuaco Temple one time, and one of the Indian congregational girls that goes to school in Rutgers brought her Orthodox Jewish friend to the temple, because in school they had some association. She's actually from a congregation member of Radha Govinda Mandir, but she was going to school in Rutgers, and so she brought to the Tuaco Temple this Orthodox Jewish person. He was, you know, in one sense open-minded enough to come to the temple, and so afterwards we sat and had some discussion, and he said exactly the same thing. And if you have any Jewish friends, you'll know. To be Jewish, you follow the law. And the law is the Bible, the Old Testament, and you have to know the Old Testament, you follow the law, and then you're Jewish, you're a good Jewish follower. And outside the law, you're not a good follower. You're not a Jewish person in good standing. And then there's Orthodox and liberal and so on. Different ways of interpreting what it means to be a follower of the law. But that's the standard. So religious person is one who follows the law. Dictionary. And the law is given by God. Religion is the law and order of the Supreme Lord. And then Prabhupada takes it up. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, we find that religion means devotional service or Krishna consciousness. Krishna says, give up all other religious principles and simply become a surrendered soul to me. This is religion. When one is fully conscious that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer and the supreme Lord, and one acts accordingly, that is real religion. Anything which goes against this principle is not religion. Krishna therefore says, just give up all other religious principles. In the spiritual world, this religious principle of Krishna consciousness is maintained in harmony. And therefore, that world is called Vaikuntha. And just a little added piece of appreciation of Sri Brahma Samhita again. In that same verse that I mentioned, text 5, it speaks of Dharma Artha Kama Moksha existing in Gokula, or existing in Goloka. Now that's surprising, isn't it? But here's the explanation. There's Dharma down here, where persons perform Dharma, religiosity, in order to get Artha, in order to get Kama, and then ultimately Moksha. So the Dharma there is as the Dharma that's being spoken of here. The essence of Dharma, the prototype Dharma, the perfection of Dharma, Krishna consciousness. And that's present. Or Dharma personified is present in the spiritual world. And the necessities of human life, or all forms of life, is naturally supplied by the personality of Godhead. And the enjoyment of the senses of the personality of Godhead is there in the spiritual world in its perfect stage. Down here is, you know, we see the same thing with a different view because we want enjoyment. In the perfect stage, it's Krishna's enjoyment. So following, even from this stage, if done properly, it can take one to that stage. Of course, combined with the association of bhakti and those carrying bhakti within their heart, the bhaktas. So in the process of, this is Srimad Bhagavatam, in the process of history, Puranic history of recounting of events, we're learning about the spiritual world and the distinction between where we are and the spiritual world. In this case, it's the Kumaras illuminating, educating us. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Yes. A little louder, please. I heard, but louder.
First question is, what's the difference between Vaikuntha and Goloka? And okay. The second is, for Vaikuntha, relating to qualifications, you said as lower anxiety or with diversity and individuality. So what are the qualifications for Goloka?
It depends on what portion of Goloka. So in the central portion of Goloka, that's Radha and Krishna in Braja. There are other parts of Goloka, Mathura and Dwaraka, and Svetadweep. Four quadrants in the language of Sri Brahma Samhita. So different qualifications for entering into those different parts. But to keep it simple, let's say the essence is Braja. And Braja Prem, the qualification for Braja Prem is the association of those who have Braja Prem and not otherwise. Even one is perfect. That is, without any material contamination or Shuddha. In Brihat Bhagavatamrita, it makes those distinctions. Bhakti Siddhanta makes those distinctions similarly from those early verses of Sri Brahma Samhita. The qualification for Vaikuntha, you could say in simple way, the association of a resident of Vaikuntha, or recognizing the personality of Godhead in all of his majestic opulence and simply being interested to serve the senses of that majestic Supreme Lord with one's own senses and with whatever is at one's disposal, simply serving him. And commonly that means recognizing his opulences in a mood of awe and reverence. Aishwarya Bhav. So that's Vaikuntha. The majesty of God and serving him in that mood, recognizing his all opulent position. And whatever there is that exists that's opulent comes from him and his opulences. And serving him in that mood. That's Vaikuntha. And then in Goloka, there are different further degrees of intimacy and less basing the service upon his majesty and the awe and reverence of his position. And then closer and closer and closer to the most confidential part, Braja. And keeping it again really simple, that's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give. Braja Prem. Even people don't know what it is. They don't know what God is. They don't know what the difference between Vaikuntha and Goloka. That's okay. Take Braja Prem. And that means progressively getting some further clarity. But, you know, that requires some purity of heart and a capacity to receive that wonderful gift. So some eagerness along with purity and humility and progressively going further and further, step by step, to the stages of Braja Prem. We can say pure love of God, and that pure love of God in its most intimate, confidential manifestation. So there's the distinction. Something else?
When you talk about purification,
speak loud so they can hear you in the back.
Yeah, when we talk about purification, does it mean that purification from material contaminations?
Purification, does that mean purification from material contamination?
And what does that mean? Does it mean bad qualities like lust, anger, greed? That doesn't mean getting free from material desires, or does it mean trying to enjoy the Bhagavad Gita?
All those things, etc. The root of impurity brings forth all of the other impurities. And according to Jiva Goswami, the root of that impurity is turning our attention away from Krishna. Bahir Mukha Jeev. Looking for happiness separate from Krishna. Because we're constitutionally part and parcel of the Supreme. And as the Supreme is the Supreme Enjoyer, we have the propensity also to enjoy. And if we repose that propensity separate from the Supreme Enjoyer, that's the root cause of contamination. Following all the other kinds behind that one. So, becoming free from contamination or becoming purified means all of the things that you mentioned. Right? Yes, Atmanivedana?
So in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that love is conceived in the mind, intelligence, and the senses. And just before Krishna says that, he says that lust is born out of from the living entities coming in contact with the mode of passion.
Yes. Yeah.
So the question is, so lust is not in the soul, so the soul, it's not seated in the soul, so then it's not actually, so the soul actually doesn't have lust, but just associates with lust?
Well, in the spiritual world, there is kama, but it's not this kind. Again, Sri Brahma Samhita, Bhaktisiddhanta's explanation. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha exist in the spiritual world. That kama is the desire to satisfy the senses of Krishna. That's the spiritual world's kama. Happiness of serving the senses of Krishna, my senses become satisfied. But it's not, selfishness is absent. Thinking of the happiness, so the gopis is the classic example. Now, that's not an ordinary way of thinking. The ordinary way of thinking is, so is there lust inherent in the soul? That's your question. Inherent in the soul is desire to satisfy Krishna's senses with one's spiritual senses. And in this condition, because of Bahir Mukha Jeev turning our attention away from Krishna's happiness, we receive, as you quoted the verse from Bhagavad Gita, the lust is now residing in the covering. But it's not the original kind, it's the other kind. It's the reflected version, born of contact with the motive passion. The motive passion is, I want to enjoy, parentheses, separate from Krishna. I want to enjoy. So that's the motive passion, separately from Krishna. Then we have coverings, gross and subtle, and then lust is in the, resting in those gross and subtle coverings. So, is lust intrinsic to the soul in a pure state? Yes, but not like we think of lust. The happiness of Krishna kind is existing in the soul. It's a mystery, huh? Yes. Can you speak loud enough so the people in the back can hear?
Krishna Talking about it, explained that after one passed and died, he was like satisfied with people. And I didn't actually, I got very clearly how I satisfied Bhakti and dying and dying, but the other Kumaras, I told them really exactly.
They're Brahmanas, and he was supporting the position of Brahmanas. Like Krishna interacted with Sudama. He worshipped him. And that's Krishna's nature. He worships the Brahmanas. He holds the Brahmanas above himself. Those three. Kumaras, Jai Vijay, and the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, and fulfilling his own desire for a chivalrous interaction with the most qualified people, his own devotees. Yes? How does it look like?
Yeah, it regulates our life is regulated, and we feel that it's steadiness, or it's an internal quality that we use.
Why does it have to be one or the other? Why can't it be both?
Well, then my question is that, is it possible to be internally steady when externally the regulating or something is going on?
Why do you ask that question? Well, are you thinking specifically in terms of your taking care of your daughter? Specifically? Can there be steadiness when you're caring for an infant? That's your question.
The more so, when when the regulation, when the, having the middle part of the care and the not that, like the timing,
Well, certainly your faith can be unbridled, unchecked by the circumstance. Although you may not be regulated because of the circumstance. And so in that case, there's steadiness in faith, but not steadiness in the execution of the regulations of bhakti because of the circumstance. Nice question. I would, again, keeping it simple, supposing the circumstance wasn't what it is, supposing your daughter was, much older, would you rate yourself at 75% pure, free from anything else than simply desiring the service of Krishna? Does that answer your question? The real thing that's important, practically speaking, is how you apply yourself, rather than rating yourself, hooking up to a meter and, what percentage am I? The important thing is you continue to your capacity to stay internally absorbed and at the same time, within reason, striving for regulation. And that doesn't, something to avoid is projecting upon your daughter, you're the cause for my being unregulated. Although you don't say it, you just like, you feel that, that's not good for mother to feel like that. Just accept the fact that irregulation is going to be there while at the same time striving for regulation. So the important thing is that, but also the internal absorption in preparing for further stages of progress in bhakti. That is, when regulation becomes more possible, you're not smashed. So there are periods of time, when say after some prolonged illness, or after the irregulation of a mother of a small child, and something that causes some smashed position. Once deviating from standards, it's very difficult to get back. That's from practical experience. I don't know anything from scripture that says that, but like starting Krishna consciousness to become regulated, that has its challenges. But having been regulated and then for some period of time deviating from regulation, it's very difficult to get back. It's much more of a struggle. So be prepared for when your daughter becomes a little older by the internal absorption now, so that as the external regulation becomes possible, you're there. You're not forcing it, not forcing your daughter, but you're preparing her and preparing yourself, and so then it becomes easier, as opposed to, harder. And you're doing that. And in part doing things that are devotional, so your daughter feels satisfied, so that when you're chanting, she lets you chant instead of grabs onto your bead bag and wants attention to, go do something that she wants to do instead of chanting. I've seen you do that. All right? Okay. You have something?
Actually, I got another question. Two questions. This readiness, is it
Loud enough they can hear you in the back.
Steadiness, is it needed for all levels, like Kanishtha, Madhyama, Uttama? Is it important at all levels?
Well, I've never heard anyone ask that question before. a beginning devotee, the Kanishtha, is commonly not steady. And the Uttama stage, they're beyond steady. Because they're Uttama, they're the topmost stage. So it's applicable especially for the Madhyama stage. That's our stage, Madhyama. We're very kindly being introduced by Lord Chaitanya and his line of disciplic succession to become Madhyamas by Sankirtan. That in itself is a Madhyama function. Congregational chanting and engaging others and like that. We're quickly brought to that stage. And then it's appropriate especially. Coming to the stage of steadiness, nishtha. So, there are other, you know, other than Lord Chaitanya's followers, that another set of things might be appropriate. But for us, it's particularly the Madhyama stage. What else?
You said first thing is everything we see in this material world, it exists in the spiritual world.
That's what Prabhupada has taught us. Sure, sure. With one exception, envy. Narottam Das Thakur has described in beautiful Narottam Das Thakur language of how each of those contaminations that are normally we think of it as contaminations, how they have their place in service to Krishna, like anger, and the example is Hanuman. Otherwise, no, but when Hanuman went to Lanka, he did what he did. He was exhibiting anger. Or Arjuna to fight, he was exhibiting anger in service to Krishna, not and otherwise not. So, like that. Each thing having its penultimate rest in the interest of the personality of Godhead, and not otherwise. But envy doesn't have its place in the spiritual world. Okay? Something else? Yes, come here.
I was thinking about the background of Rishi Maharaj, or Russell Moon. And he seems to practically go straight up to Lord Vishnu and Kamsa.
He's practically what?
He goes to Lord Vishnu unchecked right away to get darshan on Lord Vishnu practically. And he's a yogi. The poor Kumara seems, you know, they're Brahmins, but they're also more innocent. So how were they checked? And who was also Muni?
Did we hear for the beginning part of the class? Okay. That was answered in the beginning part of the class. Not exactly directly, but this is a pastime. That the personality of Godhead, Lord Narayan, is fulfilling desires of different devotees and accomplishing many things through one thing. So what he was accomplishing by permitting or allowing Durvasmudi to come was another function, purpose that he was fulfilling, glorifying Ambarish and his love for his devotee and his submission to his devotee, his subordination to his devotee. Ambarish or other such qualified devotees. That's the Lord's quality. That's a pastime to teach us. That is his quality. And here's another one with a different purpose and so different interactions. So remember our discussion down at Prashadam the other day about, you know, there's diversity in the spiritual world, and that's fine. Left ring, right ring gopis, and how Lord Narayan interacts with Durvas Muni and with the four Kumaras. There's diversity, it's fine. Different purposes, all of them loving. Okay? Something else? No, go ahead, Kalia.
In regards to the four Kumaras, it seems like they're all acting in one mind.
Yes, that you've noticed.
Yeah. Wouldn't one of them have said, well, you know, maybe they're...
Oh, let's not speculate. They do sometimes exhibit, you know, differences of not like in conflict differences, but, you know, they say different things. A nice place where that's found is chapter 87 of Canto 10. They say different things. But commonly, Sanat Kumar is the spokesperson, and they somehow have consensus commonly. Mataji, you have something.
Validate too many things while understanding Lord's pastimes, right? Like we should just get the essence of the pastime and develop the food.
Well, yes and no. I mean, it's good to get the essence, but the diversity is also part of the sweetness. One of the things that's part of my diet is dal. And I take, like, because I travel, different persons cook dal in different ways. And it's nice. So the essence is, there's mung beans. But, you know, there's different spices and different way of preparing dal. And khichdi and sabjis. And so the differences, they're also, that's nice. And relishing them, that's nice. In addition to the essence. Yes? And that's one of the delights, the happinesses of Vaishnavas is churning the topics of transcendence, of the different ways of viewing how wonderful is my Krishna. Although the essence is his loving nature. Different ways of appreciating that. And it fits very nice. Yes.
Short. I came in the middle of the class, and shortly after I came in, you were speaking to Maharaj about how Bhaktivinoda Thakur told this person who's writing a book about not to write fiction about Krishna. And I don't know if or that you would explain more on that point. My question is about that point. May I ask? I don't want to.
Go ahead.
I'm a little confused about something on this. For someone who's not fully self-realized, is it not right to try to meditate or imagine what residents of the spiritual world, how they interact with each other? Is it better? Is it more appropriate just to hear what they do, not to imagine or write about it?
Yes, better. One can certainly meditate on what one has heard. There's a formal name for that. It's called mantra upasana, where entrance into Krishna's pastimes takes place through that method. But not imagining, but hearing and meditating on descriptions of don't get too technical, but it's a particular pastime depicted, and through shabda, through spiritual sound, and there's a practice called mantra upasana, where one meditates on the Lord and his pastimes, as depicted in that mantra. And the potency is there to carry one into experiencing that pastime. And the converse of what you said, it's not an authorized process. It's not recommended. It doesn't take away from spontaneous. Spontaneous comes when there's qualification for spontaneous. But then that spontaneous is not from the mind. It's touching the heart, and the heart moves. It has another name, Sarasaki. And then Krishna enacts pastimes within one's heart.
But
that's different. The drama commonly, the drama is some pastime of Ram or pastime of Krishna or pastime of the devotees, and they're enacting that. And within that, you could say there's some poetic license. So if that's what you're speaking about, fine, but the essence is the pastime of the Lord or his devotee being depicted and meditated upon and shared through whatever the medium is, an art piece or a drama piece or a music piece. Yes?
We know that remembrance of Vishnu Smaranam comes through chanting and hearing at advanced stage. But also we hear that we need to continue to remember Krishna through different instances, like as opulences describes. So understanding is, so we should still cultivate that also, like.
Why not? Yeah. It's based upon hearing. The starting point is hearing. And then hearing, and then application of hearing. And there's different ways of, there are different subject matters that we hear, and then different ways of applying. Like, you know, deity worship, we hear about deity worship. And then there's Radha Govinda, or, deity worship. And different pujaris are going to dress the deity in a different manner, and like that. There's variety. But yet there's application of what we hear. So the vibhutis of the personality of Godhead, and meditating as Arjuna asks Krishna, please describe ways in which I can always think of you. So he does. So those are ways in which we can always think of Krishna. As is this, as is other ways. Okay. Last question. There's no what? On reverence. Keep going. Well, it depends. There are nitya siddha and sadhana siddha and kripa siddha. The gopis say, Prabhupada would quote, kritta punya punja, how many austerities these cowherd boys have undergone to be with Krishna all day long. How fortunate. How many austerities. But, then there's nitya siddha. They don't undergo any austerities. They're just Nitya Siddha. All right? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Our schedule is, as far as I know, breakfast downstairs, and then could you organize a little kirtan for, from here we're going after breakfast. This is ground floor. Then there's first floor. Then there's a mezzanine floor. So you go up the stairs in the front side to the mezzanine level, turn right, and you'll go into Prabhupada's quarters where there'll be kirtan starting at 10 o'clock. And we'll have kirtan for a while and then bring some paper or something. We'll have just questions and answers and, you know, a free-for-all, just like whatever you want to discuss. Any old topic under the sun. We'll do that for a while. So 10 o'clock, kirtan in Prabhupada's quarters, and then just discussion. Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna.